It's the great Dante Read Through.
It's the great Dante Read Through, where we are reading through all of the comic strip, The Adventures of Nicolai Dante. Co-created by Robbie Morrison and Simon Fraser from the weekly science fiction anthology comic, 2000 AD.
I'm Simon Fraser.
And I'm Edie Nugent, freelance writer and Simon's wife. Join us as we swashbuckle our way through the Russian Empire of the future. Warning, there will be spoilers. We will be talking in depth about these comics, so if you haven't read them yet, listen at your own risk. To join our book club and read along with us, go to shop.2000ad.com to pick up the books in hard copy or digital.
Today we're reading The Road of Bones, found in Progs 2007, and Deadlier Than the Mail, found in Progs 1518 to 1520.
Hi, Simon.
Hi, Edie.
And hello, Irregulars, and welcome back.
It's been a while.
Welcome back. Here you go.
Thank you.
Simon, you are going to hold the comics.
I'm going to hold the book.
You're going to hold the book. Okay. We're back in the book now, which is nice. We're in the Hachette books again. Mm-hmm. It is good to be back. We've missed you all. It's been a long time. Thank you for hanging in there, those of you who are still with us. So let's dive right
You're
in.
Both lovely.
all five of you. Mm-hmm. Who wrote it? Who drew it? Who lettered it?
Written by Robbie Morrison, art by the now sadly deceased John M. Burns, and letters by Annie Parkhouse.
Yes.
And it's called The Road of Bones.
The Road of Bones.
We're going to do two stories this time, The Road of Bones and Deadlier Than the Mail. And I think those two stories, as if we're going to underline John M. Burns' career, give you as broad an overlook as of his stylish abilities, the gamut of his abilities, as possible, especially within this story. So anyway, we're starting off with the grim miserableism.
Yes, we're starting off in the sad place.
Indeed.
We will move to a happier place. So when we last left Dante, the Tsar had appointed him as his lead mercenary, the Sword of the Tsar, if you will. And we had a crowd of Tsar loyalists that were chanting Dante's name. And the Tsar was whispering in Dante's ear, "How long will you stay a hero to them while you're doing my will?" So, we begin in the Magan Siberia district, Russia. We are still in 2673, and it is New Year's Eve. So we've got a fun little holiday romp ahead of us.
No, that means no.
Means not at all. So we learn about Magadan? Magadan. Which is 8 time zones away from St. Petersburg and appears to exist as a banishing place. Lots of bitter cold and
8
snow.
Time zones. So Russia is huge. It's what they're trying to say here.
Right. And this is where the Road of Bones is. It's a trail where Zeks, or prisoner slaves of the Tsar, are marched on roads, quote, stumbling through the corpses of earlier captives who died along the way.
Yes.
A real fun little journey.
Yes, it is.
This is a quote, by the way, from Alexander Voloshin from his book, The Dispossessed.
Sure. Which
yes.
Robbie made up entirely.
This is a new book
okay.
for us.
Right.
You know how I like to keep track of them
okay.
somewhat. So this is apparently an area full of prison and work camps, the worst of which is Kolyma. We got to decide how are we going to say it.
I'm going to go with Kolyma.
Kolyma. Kolyma it is. Where murderers, rapists, mafia gangsters all are exiled alongside writers, artists, and intellectuals.
All the scum.
Who have offended the Tsar. So it talks a little bit about the way the camps are run, where if you don't labor hard enough, your meager food rations are cut even further, which of course makes you too weak to work, and so you die. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of the criminals act as prison guards. And chief of these is German Greff, commander of the Kolyma. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's pronounced Hermann Greff. I think so.
Is that right?
Probably.
Okay.
I don't know.
All right. I'm just going to call him Greff. So okay. We're just going to... So the misery that we're seeing is interrupted by an Imperial gunship whose arrival ticks off Greff, who is looking forward to an Imperial seductress he's got stashed in his room to celebrate the new year. Gee, I wonder who that could be. The Imperial gunship. Any guesses?
No idea.
We cut to a prison cell where alone Ilana Karakin sits with her head down. She's by herself.
Looking far too pretty.
That's looking very sexily rumpled here.
Yes, yeah, very cute in her dishevelment.
Indeed. She's pretty when she's sad. Mm-hmm. And she is then escorted out of the cells and walks by a bunch of guards and prisoners who are uncharacteristically celebrating out in the yard as someone has bought them food and drink for the new year. Who do you think that could be, Simon?
Can't think.
Also, a particularly nasty guard threatens a blonde woman who Elena is friendly with, so clearly he is marked for death.
Clearly.
And we see a flashback of Elena in a heap on the floor, having, it looks like, just been beaten, mm-hmm. while Greff stands laughing and telling her he's putting her in solitary so that she'll eventually come to him willingly.
Okay. Seems unlikely, but there you go.
Seems unlikely. Present day Elena is led past Greff to a room where sits...
That guy.
Dikolai! I feel like he's always Dikolai while he's wearing that Ravenscrest jacket.
Fair enough.
He just like never stops.
Dikolai Nante. Well, you can see who's really pleased to see him.
Elena, yeah.
Not really.
She immediately clocks the jacket.
Yeah.
And Dante explains how he's sort of the czar now. Mm-hmm. And Elena gets out a heroes be damned, which is nice.
Yeah.
Just sort of like throwing mm-hmm. his own words back at him and says, all the heroes she knows are dead.
All of them.
Ouch. And Dante sort of counters with, sometimes you have to do what it takes to survive. And though he's being a total Dikolai about it, I like kind of agree with him. Like, this world is so messed up.
It's not like his own family have been particularly nice to him.
So yeah. Sure. I mean, you know, I guess it's just that
also,
this...
the boundaries are getting very fuzzy about who belongs to what clan right about now.
It's true. And I mean, who... Arguably, the Tsar has wrought a lot of, like, pain and suffering under his rule, but, mm-hmm. I mean, do we really think that the Romanovs were going to be any better? Like, probably not.
God, no.
I would think no. So, who knows? But anyway, Elena is mad. She's mad. And mm-hmm. Dante basically tells her that he's gotten her pardoned and that he wants her to watch his back as, like, his guard because she's the only one he can trust.
It looks like she wants to kill him, too.
I don't really think
there's anyone left who doesn't want to kill him.
I know. I was saying I wouldn't be too sure about mm-hmm. that, Dante. But Elena says she'll only come to him if he frees all the other prisoners. Mm-hmm. So he tells her that he can't, not just now. And so she goes back to prison.
Looks like there's a Winnebago. It's a Winnebago park.
Yeah, it's like weirdly, it's like all the officers at this prison camp are in little like Airstream trailers, yeah. And that's where Dante is. But she's Darcy. Led back to the to the misery. Cells, which is it's pretty badass. She's like, well, then fine, I'll go to prison. She's not taking
she's
his
made
offer.
Her point of principle, and then she's going to go immediately turn around and say, no, okay, I'll take it.
Well, she has a reason, right? We got to give her a reason.
Again,
she returns, and somehow she's in Gen Pop now. She's like not in solitary anymore. Mm-hmm. And she's asking where Nadia is, who is the blonde lady mm-hmm. we saw earlier. And apparently Marco and the criminal enforcers, who are like the criminals that enforce the prison, took her to celebrate with.
Oh, dear.
Like I said, marked for death.
Yep.
We know any time a woman is gleefully
celebrated
threatened
with
assault, you are marked for death in this comic. Mm-hmm. And so we smash cut back to Elena in Dante's guest chambers, and she agrees to guard him on one condition. Mm-hmm. And Dante has already surmised as much, saying she has some scores to settle and has found her old swords, because apparently the Tsar likes to keep trinkets from his enemies, just like a serial killer.
Yes. Well, he is, isn't he?
I mean, he really is.
One of the biggest.
truly. So Elena gets her swords and stalks off in the snow towards the future Winnebago-looking things, where the enforcers are celebrating, and pauses to knee Greff in the balls along the way. And we all know how this is going to go, right? Yeah, like, Elena stalks in. Our head flunky, who's marked for death, is leering at Nadia, and Elena reminds us just how good she is with her swords across two glorious pages of slice-em, dice-em John Byrne's action.
Mm-hmm. He's very good at that.
He's very good at it. You really can watch the trajectory of all of these things happening and follow it very easily. And it's brutal. It's brutal. She is slashing throats. She's cutting chests. She's slicing hands open. I mean,
brilliantly done, like with these sort of white lines through it, and
the speed lines. Yeah,
it's very, very well done.
They are. It looks great. Mm-hmm. Let's see the button on the end of this story. Mm-hmm. Because it's basically over now.
Essentially,
it's like over now. The button on the end of the story is Dante is announcing to Greff that he and the Tsar both know that he's been stealing shipments of uranium ore from the Imperial mines and selling them through the late Marco and his mafia contacts. Mm-hmm. So he's being replaced as the head commander, and he is now sentenced to 25 years hard labor in Kolyma, which obviously he won't survive to serve his sentence out because he's all out of shape and the prisoners are going to want revenge on him.
Yes.
So Dante saunters out of the prison camp with his new guard at his back, and somehow they still had Elena's clothes because she's in her classic Elena getup here.
Who knows?
They just like kept her clothes somewhere. Yeah. And Elena says they've become what they wanted to destroy. And with a wink, Dante agrees, that's what they all think.
Ha ha. Yes, as ever, Elena's standing as the voice of moral authority in this story.
Indeed.
As she does in most stories.
What a fun little New Year's romp that was. It's kind of... it's weird to me that it ends on a Dante wink, because the whole thing is so dark and just, like, grinding and awful, and Elena hates Dante, and, like, he's just sort of, like, gleefully unaware, and, I mean, I guess he's aware, but he's not letting it faze him, and it just... I don't know. It just... And it's like a Dante wink.
Every reason to hate him and every reason to just stab him right there and then, frankly.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think it's got to affect him, Elena looking at him like that, because he had a lot of respect for her. So as much as he tries to play the lighthearted Dante, I'm doing what I must, the wink at the end is weird to me.
Well, he's looking for her approval.
I guess. He's trying to.
He's desperate for the true approval of the woman in his life. And Elena's probably the one he wants most approval from. Probably even more than his mother, frankly.
That's an interesting insight. So next up,
yes,
so Deadlier Than the Male.
Deadlier Than the Male. A total tonal shift from John M. Burns here and Robbie Morrison, who is...
Letters from Annie Parkhouse, don't
letters
forget.
From Annie Parkhouse, originally published in Prog's 1518 to 1520.
So strap in, folks.
This is a straight up romp.
This one is going to be a bumpy ride for me.
Yeah.
I'm just...
That's fine.
I'm just letting us know right up front.
Sure.
This awesome. One is really... Yep. All right. So here we go.
Yeah.
So we open on a close-up of a sort of fan magazine dedicated to Dante, his sexploits, and apparently including a knickerless Dante photo shoot.
Wow.
And this magazine and a few others, we find out, are dedicated to Dante, and they have made it into the hands of the male slaves on the island of Amazonia. Okay. And this has upset Queen Diana of Amazonia, who is definitely not Wonder Woman, who tears the magazine to shreds, calling it sexist propaganda that is an attempt to destabilize her matriarchal paradise. So basically, we're on an island founded in the late 21st century, so like 60 to 70 years from now, from our present day, and it was founded as a reaction to the continued male dominance of Earth.
Okay.
But New Year, we are now in 2674, right? Our last story ended on New Year's Eve, so we are in a new year.
Okay.
And I'm just like amazed that the paper publishing industry has made it all the way to 2674 for her to tear apart this.
It's a tablet.
But she rips it apart and it shreds into paper.
Smashed it. Looks all broken glass.
Oh, it is a tablet.
It's an iPad.
Well, that's me told.
There you go.
Excellent. She breaks the iPad in anger.
High tech, 90s.
Yeah, I guess we had iPads by this time. We did. We're in like 2007 right now. Apparently in this Amazonia, here woman is hunter-gatherer, trained to violent perfection in the art of war. But apparently not trained in appropriate battle clothing. It is little pleated gladiator skirts for days.
Yeah.
Real feminist.
This is Amazonia, courtesy of like Italian exploitation movies of the 1960s and 70s.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I think Wonder Woman had little skirts in them. Mm-hmm. So basically, the warrior ladies of Amazonia believe that the Tsar is trying to undermine their queendom, I guess you would call it. Apparently, according to the Imperial Times, recent events have caused tension between the Tsar and Diana.
Okay.
So the Tsar sends in a new ambassador to Amazonia on his behalf. And can you guess who it is, Simon?
No, I can't guess. Who could it be?
Why, it's Dante, of course.
What? That guy?
That guy. Dante, followed by floating cameras that look like chicken-sized little spaceships and that are broadcasting these exploits around the world for the purpose of public relations, according to Dante.
Did we just see this? We just saw this in Babylon 5.
We did. We've been doing a Babylon 5 watch through. I think we may have mentioned it on this podcast already.
Still doing it.
And we're still doing it. Over a year later. Listen, there's a lot of episodes in those American syndication TV seasons. It's like 22 episodes a year.
We get distracted.
We also get distracted. That's correct. But yes, we did just see those in the propaganda season 4 episode of Babylon 5. In case you're interested, that's the one we were watching.
Yes.
The one with the propaganda journalists.
You're not obliged to keep up with it.
I bet you some of our listeners have watched Babylon 5.
I'm sure they have.
So Dante chats with the Amazons and it goes about how you'd expect. Badly. And I think it's Diana that says Dante is the embodiment of all they loathe about the male sex.
Okay.
Now I'm just going to stop here.
Okay.
So we're in 2007, right? Mm-hmm. The last Prague was the like New Year Prague issue. So we're 7 years from when Beyoncé performs Flawless at the MTV VMA Awards in front of the word feminist in giant letters, which to me is kind of a big moment where the word feminist becomes not a dirty word anymore, right? I think in 2007, it was still something a little bit sort of had been successfully like... stigmatized as like, oh, it's angry women and, you know, they're just mean and they don't like men.
I don't know. I mean, it was Camille Paglia was a bit earlier than that. She was late 90s.
It was, but you got to remember, this was the shock jock sort of stuff that came out in the late 90s that did the whole feminazi thing and sort of successfully loaded it.
Yep.
You know, we're in 2007 and I just want to like, put us in that time because that's when this is written, right? So it's funny that the Amazons think Dante is the embodiment of all they loathe, right? Because like, forgive me, but when did Dante actually like oppress women, like deny them jobs, say they shouldn't have reproductive health care? Like, he's for sure sexually harassed more than a few women and that sucks, but yes. Like, that's just like a part of like overall systemic oppression. So like, this is a very limited view of what feminism argues for.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that Robbie probably wasn't reading much feminist theory at the time.
Yes. Well, and this idea that feminism means women can't have fun having sex with men and that men having casual sex with women is inherently unfeminist. Mm-hmm. So, like, I know this is just a silly little comic, right? And I'm not holding it to some crazy standard.
I'll take the point of view that maybe Dante is as a symbol of the patriarchy.
Okay.
Maybe is representing something larger than himself. He himself is not responsible for it, but he is the front and center. He's taking the heat for a lot because he is the Tsar's man. So basically he represents the
I don't think that that's patriarchy. Why they're saying that he's all they loathe about men, though.
Okay.
I don't think so. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I think that this depiction, as kind of like crude as it is, as I find it, as limited as it is. Because like this is supposed to be like an evolved race of women that like evolved from the end of the 21st century. Like that's like basically 60, 70 years from now, whatever. Mm-hmm. And we're in 2674, which is like, it's been around a long time. Yeah. So I just am like, these women would be more evolved than this, than think that like silly little Dante is the embodiment of all that's wrong with men. Like it's just silly. But here's the thing. This really hits upon something because while we've been reading this series, Dante's often been like a time capsule of like the current mainstream opinions, right? He pushes the edge a little bit, but like not too much. And I think it's kind of amazing to think how far we've come from this. Like I remember, you know, like I remember this time. I remember how people sort of talked about feminism at this time. And I'm like, wow, we've come so far in such a short time. And then, I remember that 2007 was almost 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
It's so painful.
Yeah.
I'm just going along going, oh, you know, our Dante's a time capsule. Because like we started Dante, and it's like in the mid-90s. Yep. It was, oh, such a long time ago. And now I'm like, oh, this, you know, this was just yesterday. But it wasn't. It was like almost 20 years ago.
I'm sorry, you're over 40 now.
That's I know. This is what happens to you.
This is it.
Ay, ay,
ay. Suddenly your average memory is like 20 years ago. It's like,
so crazy to me. But 2007.
Just wait till 30 years ago. Oh, my gosh. 35 years ago.
I'm bracing myself. So anyway, back to our man-hating feminist avatars who look too damn good in a skirt. I will say this, it's silly costumes, but man, do they look great.
Yes.
Oof. And John Burns is just...
Listen, you want scantily clad women? He's just it. He's just the pinnacle.
He's it.
Pinnacle.
He's so
nobody
good.
Nobody did it better.
Ugh, just beautiful. I mean, thighs for days on these ladies as they charge, charge into battle, charge at the
comically,
reader.
It's got to be said, he's doing more than a little bit of cartooning here, which is is fun. I like it when he does.
Yeah, well, this is a fun, silly story. As much as I'm like talking about like you know light feminist theory here, it is a fun little story. That's what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be a joke, right?
It's
we're joking here.
Attack of 50-foot woman. We're going
to
get to that.
Yeah, we're going to get to that. Spoilers. So back to the man-hating feminists. So Dante pushes his foot from his mouth farther down his throat, trying to find common ground with the Amazons, right? So as he's doing this, a hologram of the Tsar appears and explains to the Amazons that his subjects must have freedom and equality, right? This would be the PR part, I suppose, is that like this is being broadcast and we have this hologram of the Tsar saying, all my subjects must have freedom and equality, because like this is weird coming out of the mouth of the Tsar, of course.
Especially the men.
Yes, especially the men. Well, a moment later, after he says freedom and equality, the Tsar is calling Dante his thrusting sword and claiming he must introduce sexual equality to Amazonia forcibly, if need be.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, that's how equality needs
that's
to be enforced.
That's how equality works, folks. Thrusting and forcibly.
It's like imposing democracy.
Yes, you know, exactly. That's right, yeah. Democracy or you will die. Yes. Wait a minute. So then we have a gag about how the last ambassador the Tsar sent along had some reconstruction, and we see a big hulking dude in the background with boobs carrying a tray, and he tells Dante that the operation isn't bad, and it'll give him a whole new outlook on life, and Diana says something about not using anesthetic on Dante should he undergo this operation because he's too manly for anesthetic, and Dante says, I'll pass on this operation. This is such a weird exchange. Okay. Yeah. This is such a weird exchange to me because it's like, I mean, I guess we're just joking about like forcibly removing people's, like changing people's genitals. Like,
I think they're just going to chop his dick off. I mean, I don't think
but also
they're not
boobs.
Like gender reassigning.
Also, yes, they are. They're boobs.
They did that. This guy, we don't know if this guy didn't agree to it. That's the thing. Our reason's not that bad, honest. I'll give you at least like
maybe they argued him into it, but maybe. Like also you shouldn't argue people into like gender affirming surgery.
I don't think there's any arguing here. I think they're just going to do it to enforceably. It's not.
This is what I'm saying. That's not right. So anyway, I will just say through in this we are in 2007, and I had to like check myself because I was just thinking about how we're in 2007 a moment ago, and this feels like a very 90s joke to me, right?
Yeah.
Like the square jawed dude with the 5 o'clock shadow and big juicy boobs,
right.
And like, here's the thing. And talking about sort of basically forced gender surgery, implying forced gender surgery.
Indeed.
And what sucks is that to a lot of people, this is what they actually think gender affirming healthcare is. Like in the year of our Lord 2024 mm-hmm. now, they think that this is what transgender issues are.
Yes.
They see transgender folks as ridiculous and silly. And so I just want to pause here
mm-hmm.
and I just want to say, we love you, trans community. We love you. You're awesome.
Yes.
You are awesome and you are valued and cared for and you're amazingly strong people and our world is so much better with you in it. Thank you for fighting through this crappy world to be here with us.
Indeed.
I just needed to like drop that
yeah.
Because it's hard for me to see these things now. I can't really, I mean, this is, again, it's very 90s, right? I mean, you look at things like Ace Ventura, they've got, the whole movie hinges on this joke,
yeah.
basically. You see this a lot of places, but yeah, it felt a little like throwback for me, but anyway, we're going to move right along. It's
yeah.
basically a throwaway. Sorry, a lot of deviations in this.
No, I mean,
the
questions are being hurled into the debate. I mean, that's it. We're here. This story exists, and it's definitely anachronistic. And,
yeah,
and
I just feel like it's
a little.
It doesn't
really stand up.
I feel like it's a little behind its own time.
Right.
2007. I feel like we should be a little further along than this for Dante.
Yeah.
But in any event. Moving right along, the Amazons all attack Dante,
mm-hmm.
while the Crest is salty and telling Dante that this is what they call payback for all his womanizing. Which Dante does correctly point out that he's been taken advantage of by women many a time.
It's true.
Which is true, of course. But as we look around the Tsar's kingdom, not a lot of women in power positions. I mean, can you really think of any? Other than Jenna,
well,
who's
Jenna really,
and yeah. that's nepotism,
mm-hmm.
right? Like, so that doesn't even count to me because that's.
I mean, I love this setup here. Like, we've got the Tsar and his friend on the couch here, Arkady, and like Jenna's just standing behind.
We're gonna get there. We're not there yet.
This setup is.
I know we're not there yet. We're about to get there.
Sorry.
But all I'm saying is, not a lot of women in power positions around the
mm-hmm.
the Tsar's kingdom. So exploiting Dante is not the same as, you know, exploiting, say, Elena or anyone else. But I refuse to digress further, okay?
Sure.
Robbie is baiting me, and I'm not going to do
it's
it.
True.
We're moving right along.
Yes.
Naughty
man.
Naughty, naughty, Robbie. So as Dante comically flees the hot hordes at his heels. You like that?
Mm.
Thank you.
Good alliteration.
We cut to the Tsar's living room, I guess. This is what you were talking about?
Yeah.
So Arkady and the Tsar are kicking back on a royal sofa that looks like it belongs at Mar-a-Lago,
mm-hmm.
and they are drinking champagne and watching this show beamed live of Dante and the Amazons.
Talk about being oppressed by the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Well, they're obviously behind it, aren't they? These two.
They are the patriarchy.
Yeah, they're manipulating Dante just as much as anybody else.
They are. Dante.
If I may
Dante
leap
is
to
being
Dante's defense
oppressed by the patriarchy. Well, listen, you're going to make me digress again by saying that, like, you know, patriarchal control hurts us all.
It hurts us all.
Listen, men and women alike.
Absolutely. And then
men, women,
into
and
the
those outside
bath chamber.
The gender binary
Sorry,
all
to get us
suffer.
Back on. Yes.
So get us back on track.
Indeed.
So no. You just skipped by a bunch of.
we're gonna
go back to the Tsar's living room here for a minute. Okay. Tsar's living room. So unfortunately, Jenna is also taking in this spectacle,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
So the Tsar explains that this was all Arkady's idea. And apparently Dante is popular with the lower classes, says Arkady.
Yes.
So they'll make money off him through reality television and film releases, apparently.
Right. So this is reality TV. Yeah.
So this is reality TV. And we have the little like gag of the Tsar saying, Jenna, get out of the way of the TV, right? Which is like the classic dude saying, get out of the way of my sports game to the lady.
Right.
But I just feel bad that like Jenna is like seeing all this.
Mm-hmm.
I just feel bad for Jenna again. And she still looks really, really hot in her Tsar uniform.
I hate the pink hair.
I know you don't like the pink hair. It's
burgundy. It was burgundy.
Listen, let's just no prize this. Jenna was going through a phase.
Mm.
You know, she was.
She watched the Barbie movie and that was it.
She watched the Barbie movie and she was like, we're going hot pink, guys.
Mm-hmm.
It's happening. Or just her hair has lost some of its rich depth because she's going through a hard time.
Oh, she just dyed it.
Her hair is like a mood ring.
It's like you dye your hair and after, a few
washes out.
It starts to wash out. So obviously, Burns is doing
Jenna needs
the end of the cycle, or just before she has a new dye job.
Jenna needs to go to the royal coiffier.
Yeah, have it updated.
Okay, so meanwhile, back in Amazonia,
mm-hmm.
Dante comically stumbles into the bathhouse of the Amazons and wrestles with a bunch of naked.
Wow. Running through a naked bathhouse again. We've been here a couple of times. Yeah.
So he's wrestling with a bunch of naked warrior women.
And I gotta say, this is a masterpiece of like not really showing anything, even though you're showing everything.
Yes, we don't have any nipples, and we don't really have any bush.
If he was doing line work at this point, the artwork is all like gouache or watercolor, yes. So it's all kind of like loose and kind of like impressionistic. So if he was doing line work, he'd actually have to draw boobs and pelvic regions and all this stuff. But because he's doing it with gouache, he can just like fudge it a little bit and you get away with all this rampant nudity.
Well, you know, it's funny you say that because I was going to ask, like, are you sad you didn't get to draw these pages?
I'm mortified.
Naked ladies.
When I heard about it, I was like, oh no.
Right?
The minute
I hit this section, Simon, I was like, oh no.
I didn't get a chance.
Simon's biting his fist somewhere in the past, you know, like all of these women just straddling him and naked and there are all these great positions we get to see them get into, which I feel like you would really love the challenge of, like putting these women in all these physical positions and sort of non-sexual nudity. This is one of your things. This is one of your big things.
You clearly understand me very well.
Well, I would hope so.
Yeah. Anyway,
so anyways,
masterfully done.
Beautifully done by John Burns.
John Burns.
Absolutely beautifully done.
As always.
So Dante is overpowered by the women who throw him out a window because it ain't a Dante comic adventure until he ends up thrown from a window.
Glass. They just make rubbish glass in the future.
This is where the Tsar cheaps out.
This is where I bugbear.
Oh no, this is Amazonia. Amazonia is cheaping out on their glass as well. It's an epidemic of thin glass throughout the world. So Dante lives from this fall by grabbing onto the spear of a warrior lady statue conveniently located under the window.
Aren't they always?
I just love to always note, like, what is the MacGuffin that allows Dante to survive?
This stuff is so tiring. You read it and it's like, he hasn't given us any thought at all. He's just like, oh, there's just something there. And it's like, wait, that means you've got to plan out the whole trajectory. You've got to actually plan out the space above, the space below. You've got to work out how this all makes sense. And it's like, it's just mad.
Well, John Burns really does a wonderful thing here, actually, at this, because we just see, you know, kind of from behind Dante being thrown out the window. We're sort of underneath him, and we see the women throwing him out the window.
Oh, he totally bodges it.
And then we just cut to Dante grabbing onto the spear of this statue that's on a plinth. So it's, you know, it's well done.
He knows what he's doing.
Then Dante finds himself among the male slaves, and he gives a rousing speech about manhood and about, apparently manhood is linked to boozing and carousing. This is what all the men should do. And the men start chanting Dante's name.
It's the canned speech.
Yes, it is the canned speech. Oh my God. This is Dante's mojo dojo whatever casa something. They start chanting Dante's name before they flee in the other direction. Yes,
wisely.
So Dante sarcastically surrenders to the women, teasing them that they needed their entire army to take down one man. So he of course challenges them to single combat. And if he wins, he gets a democratic referendum on sexual equality.
Wow.
I don't know if those words have ever been uttered after I demand single combat. I think this may be the first time in history.
I'm not aware of it, but it's something to think about.
It's something to think about. So who is the champion that the Amazons will set against Dante?
Well, that would be the, I think she's more than 50.
The giant titan of a woman fittingly named Titania.
Is she like 70 feet?
I was going to say, is she 80 feet? Like, how big is she, do you think?
That's a lot of
my guess was 80 feet.
Yeah.
Just based on the perspective we see here.
That's a lot.
She is very big. And even though she's a titan, she still only has a skirt and a strapless brassiere on. One that shows off plenty of underboob.
Yes.
So, but let's not trouble ourselves with questions about whether it's actually a fair fight or showing too much fear of Dante to like pit him against this like comely colossus. But we get treated to like five sumptuous pages of a giant lady and Dante playing David and Goliath. So that's what this has all been
really
building up
why
to.
We're here.
That's the whole reason that we're here. Yes.
I don't know whether this is my wildest fantasy or my worst nightmare.
Indeed.
I hear you, Dante.
Both. The answer is yes. It's both, Dante. Yeah. But like,
Careful what you wish for.
Notable moments throughout this. Dante almost getting smothered to death between her giant breastises. Mm-hmm. And you'd think that's pretty much the death Dante would like choose for himself, mm-hmm. right? Or one of them.
Frankly.
And the just gorgeously rendered curves of Titania, right?
Yep.
She pulls off her giant bra at one point, which mm-hmm. must be like the size of a bus. And is Dante ends up swinging around on the end of it through mm-hmm. the air and gets whipped into his little dick ship.
Yeah, you know, no, he's actually swinging in the loincloth. He manages to get the loincloth.
He does manage to. He slips. Well, he's on the brassiere, and then he falls to the loincloth.
Grabs the loincloth, then she takes the loincloth off and uses like a whip to whip him into the air.
Yes.
So basically, he manages to get her into a G-string.
Into a G-string. But he lands in his little penis ship.
Yes.
What is that thing called?
Strike Hawk.
The Strike Hawk. He lands there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that single combat allows for combatants to use spaceships. But
I mean, she's got an axe. He's got a spaceship. I don't know. I mean, they're both tools.
I don't know, man. But Dante's Strike Hawk heads toward Titania's giant ass,
mm-hmm.
because you know that panel just had to happen. We have a nice visual there of the sort of phallic ship.
Where am I aiming? You have
shooting
to
towards her bum.
Yes.
You know that panel just had to happen, right?
Yep.
The crest helps Dante shoot hypodermic harpoons into her butt cheek, which he electrifies in a non-lethal way. Because Dante wants her alive to, quote, get to know her better.
For a drink.
I actually want to see that sex comic.
I think there's a certain practical limitation where it's just not sex anymore. It's just,
I don't know.
Like, is she going to use him as an idea? Am I going to? I'm not going here.
I mean, listen.
I'm not doing it.
If we look at proportionally here, there are only a couple of erogenous zones that he needs to grapple with. And I feel like proportionally, he might be able to do it.
Listen.
Might be an effort.
He's nothing if not willing.
Yes. Anyway, someone's giantess kink is like really loving this issue. Mm. Like.
True.
Big time. Yep. Right? Somehow all this weaponry isn't cheating. And Dante is declared the victor. So the referendum goes through.
Mm-hmm.
But the men decide that they like being dominated slaves, and so nothing actually changes.
Consent. Yay.
Right. Well, my last word on this, I swear, is that feminist warriors wouldn't actually want male slaves, like real feminist warriors, mm-hmm. because honestly, that's just too many men, right?
Yeah.
We'd have like sexy robots or something. I think it's definitely a male fantasy to be a sex slave to a bunch of warrior women. This is not anything that women think about. Let's put men in cages. Like, we just kind of get rid of most of them, I think.
That's funny.
The Last Man, right? Where it's like men are only used for breeding and mm-hmm. kept locked away. We wouldn't just have them like flitting around feeding us grapes. It's too dangerous. They're dangerous.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Smelly and dangerous.
So Dante tells Queen Diana that he supports the men's decision as long as they're all consenting adults, as you say,
mm-hmm.
which is like interesting to hear the word consent come out of Dante's mouth. Has he ever said consent before?
I'm not sure. Maybe a new idea.
We know he's anti-rape, but being anti-rape and understanding consent are not always the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Diana wants to face off with Dante in single combat in bed.
Well, yeah.
Which, of course, gets broadcasted.
Is it live footage?
Footage. She's laying on her side all naked, and then he turns off the cameras. So presumably Jenna and the whole world can see that. Before he shuts off the cameras.
Jenna's seen it before. She's seen everything before.
She's seen it all.
She doesn't care at this point.
And there you go. The end.
Woo-hoo!
The end.
So yeah, as a fitting, not quite mini little tribute to John M. Burns, there's two extremely different stories done in two very different ways by one of the masters of the form.
Well, let's talk about John Burns for a minute, because this is our first podcast
mm-hmm.
since John Burns has left us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It has to be said, without Burns, there would not be Dante as we know it today. He's an absolutely keystone member of the team.
Yeah.
He's very much missed, frankly.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to accept a reality he doesn't exist in.
Yeah.
Because he's so omnipresent in this work, in my kind of field of vision. And we've got one of his pages, actually his last Dante page in the hallway of our house. Framed in the hallway of the house here.
I posted it on our Instagram account.
Just in case people missed that. But yes, it's there. So every day we see it.
It's interesting. And I can't remember who this was, but when I was looking on the interwebs,
mm-hmm.
about Dante. I saw that somebody did like a eulogy post for John M. Burns, and they had a bunch of his artwork up, and that was one of the pages they included from Dante, was that page we have on the wall.
It's a great page.
It is a great page. So
I'm very proud to have it.
Yeah, oh my God, I'm so glad we have that. I mean, we literally see it every single day. It's literally right where we walk by the stairs.
There's a nice message on it to us. So
Well, to you.
To me.
To you. Which is good and right. And I think wonderful that you have that, considering that you guys basically collaborated without collaborating.
Yeah, I mean, we only ever met once. As I've said a number of times, like, we only ever met once and exchanged no more than like 5 or 6 words. So it's like in our whole time working, theoretically working together, which we
but,
were.
But he said in his little note that he put with it that he like really appreciated working on Dante and thanked you for creating this character that he got to do so much work on. And
listen, there's no doubt that he had a huge affinity for Dante, and Dante is vastly superior.
Dante loved him back.
Certainly did.
Yeah, loved him back.
Certainly did.
You know, and it was interesting in reading a lot of the different obituaries for him. A lot of people said that like his apex was Dante.
It's funny to think, because his career was so long and so storied. I mean, he did so much and so, and it was so brilliantly done. He was kind of a master without a masterpiece in lots of ways. He's done a lot of really great work on other people's things, other people's stories, other people's, he filled in, he sort of took over things for a lot of people. He wasn't famous for doing one thing. He was famous for being, it was like kind of Alex Toth. He's like famous for being masterfully great at everything he did, but there was no one story you would go, well, that's his definitive piece. So I'm glad that a lot of people seem to think that his Dante work was some of his definitive work, which is, you know,
tremendous. I thought that was pretty huge for an artist like that, and that's what they're saying. And this is a character that you co-created, Simon. That's pretty huge.
I'm very proud of that fact that he's, you know.
I'm sure when you co-created Dante, you weren't thinking, this is going to change John M. Burns' life. You know? Like,
I kind of hoped it would change mine a little bit.
Well, it did change your life. But you know what I'm saying. Yeah. It's like amazing how these things turn out. So, so the late, great John M. Burns, much missed, never forgotten. And so, on our last episode, I was talking all about like listener feedback and questions, and I was going to collect these and do a questions episode.
What?
I did, and it did not happen.
It didn't happen.
So we're going to do it now.
Oh my God.
We're going to do it now.
All right.
Because we got some time left, so we're going to do it now. Okay. And so first, I wanted to give a big shout out to Bob Tamuka in Auckland, New Zealand, and his excellent and prolific blog about comics called The Tea Room of Despair. And this is a very prolific. He's written a lot about comics there. Mm-hmm. And he basically talks about how he loves the Nicolai Dante strip, right? And it's the thing that got him back into 2000 AD when he thought he was done. So he loves the great Dante read-through. He says it's right up his alley. And he calls me the podcast secret weapon, which I just love so much. And Bob,
it's not a secret.
Bob, your 20 pound is in the mail. You should receive it soon. But he wrote a very sweet little thing and talked about how you're a dour Scot who has a moan about everything.
What? That's ridiculous. I've never been so insulted in my entire life.
And he said he smashed through the first 20 episodes in a couple of weeks, so he binged us, which I think is now.
How many episodes have we done?
We've done this is episode 36, I think. 36, yeah. So I will just say that though I know our listener pool is not exactly as deep as maybe some other podcasts, it really warms my heart that somebody binged us, because I binge so much media like that, and it's like I feel very like honored
that we're in his head that much.
I don't at all.
It feels unnecessarily intimate.
See, I think that's the dour thing he's talking about, babe.
Really?
Anyway, thank you, Bob, for your wonderful review. Go check out his blog, The Tea Room of Despair, which is a wonderful title.
I'm supposed to be doer. Jesus Christ.
So, reader feedback. Okay. So, Barrington Boots asks, who is my favorite character?
Good
and
character.
How about Simon?
Oh, me? I'm the favorite character. I'm the favorite character.
You're not in Dante, baby.
Am I? I am. I think I'm later. I'm in it.
Oh, spoilers.
Spoilers.
Okay. So, favorite character that isn't you. Charco.
T-shirts on coming. I mean, seriously.
No, you know, it's a tough one. It's a tough one. I'm really struggling, actually, with that answer.
Really?
Yeah, because there's a lot of really good characters. I mean, Ellie is a sentimental favorite for me.
Yeah.
Okay. She's gone too soon, but I did love her.
Yep.
I love the way that you drew her. I loved who she was. So she's up there. I also love Dante's mama.
She's great.
She's incredible.
She's great.
Truly incredible. Mm-hmm. And of course, I really enjoy Lulu, but... Mm-hmm. Everybody Lulu also does. Scares the ever-living crap out of me, so I don't know if I can say she's my favorite just because she's a little
Hellfire
too terrifying.
Yeah, we've got Hellfire coming up next, by the way, so yeah.
I've got that taste in my mouth, so
yep.
I'm going to say, I'll say
Hellfire
for now,
immediately after this,
Mama so. Dante and Ellie. So how about you? Who's your favorite character?
That's an interesting question.
Right?
I mean, Andreas was a lot of fun.
He was a lot of fun. That's really true.
I like drawing Pyre. I mean, I read a lot of fun drawing Pyre because he's just so much fun. It's always good when you get to design your own monsters because they're always like, they're always going to be fun to draw because you will always design something that's fun to draw by and large. So Pyre was always going to be fun. And every time he shapeshifted into another kind of different deranged creature, I'm like, yes.
Yes.
Fun.
Really kind of, it's sort of like you almost like gave the answer that is the cop-out answer because Pyre can be anyone. So
well, yes, but Pyre is the most fun to draw in lots of ways. Lulu is the least fun to draw, though probably the character I
because of the Lace of Doom.
Yeah, the lace, the whole thing.
The little mini creatures.
Yeah, everything about her is a lot of work to draw. But yeah, she's enormously an entertaining character because she's very
uncompromising.
Powerful. Uncompromising, very powerful.
Uncompromising.
In her own way. So that's great. Yeah. To be honest, I like the Tsar a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Tsar. I'm going to go out on a limb and say I think the Tsar is maybe the actual hero of the story.
What?
Yeah.
Simon, what are you even saying?
Yeah. Well,
listen, you know.
We'll get to the end and we'll
we will get to that
further.
Actually in the next. You have heard me several times in this podcast say, why am I starting to agree with the Tsar? You have heard me say that a few times, and we definitely have that coming up in Hellfire. So that's an interesting thing. But Barrington Boots also asks he's been struck by how much love and feelings of ownership that you have for the characters that you co-created. And if you and another artist were to work on Dante again, who would you pick to draw it if not John Byrnes?
Oof. Oh, man.
You can think about that one
I mean,
if you want.
Any artist at all in
any
the whole
artist.
World?
Any artist in the world.
Okay. This is something I kind of know would be good because I have a drawing downstairs that my friend Jim bought me for my 50th, which is a drawing of Nicolai Dante by Chris Samnee.
Yes.
And Chris Samnee, I think, is one of the best comic artists working right now. I think he's absolutely amazing. His Black Widow series is just one of the best things I've ever seen drawn as a comic book. So I think, it would be
Chris Samnee.
A huge kick.
You know, that's a really good answer. I will take a picture of the Samnee and post it on our Instagram account. I don't think it's on there. So I will post it so everyone can enjoy it. And shout out to Jim Dugan. Thank you for being the best.
Thanks, Jim.
Always.
Always the
and
best.
And getting that beautiful, beautiful commission for you.
Fantastic.
Incredible.
I'm just looking up to the right here, actually. There's also a Samnee, which is a
Judge
Dredd.
He threw in a little Judge Dredd head just for funsies.
Yeah. He just loves drawing things that much.
And I remember what Jim said about that commission is he said that Samnee was not at all familiar with Nicolai Dante. And so he just sort of combed through Dante, what he was able to find about Dante, and came up with that picture. And when you see it, you'll understand how impressive that is because he nailed it. He nailed it.
Guy's a pro.
Okay. So, you know, Bootsy, Barrington Bootsy, I hope he doesn't mind me calling him that. I'm assuming it's a him.
It's very familiar.
It's super forward. I apologize. I'm being very forward right now.
Only the intimates know him by that name.
Boots, Boots says he hopes that we can make it over to a con at some point.
Well.
So, you know, I was going to save this for the end, but we're going to throw it in now. Folks, we are going to be at Lawless. Mm-hmm. We did mention this, I think, on our socials a little while ago, but we are going to be at the Lawless Comic-Con. That is May 25th and 26th at the Doubletree Hilton in Bristol. Mm-hmm. And tickets are still available. Go to Lawless Comic-Con, all one word. Sorry, Comic-Con. lawlesscomiccon.co.uk. And we don't know which day our podcast panel will be happening, but we're going to do a podcast panel.
We're going to try.
And yes, we are going to try and record a live podcast episode. I am very, very...
My in a past life, I did do sound recording in public with things like movies and stuff. And the idea of doing this is filling me with dread.
I was going to say, Simon's terrified, but listen, I just still want to attempt it. Okay. You know what I mean? It's just such a thing when podcasts do a live episode. It's exciting. So please...
You're a podcast nerd.
Yes, I am a huge podcast nerd. Please come to Lawless and come out if you can hang out with us. We'll let you know what day that panel is going to be as soon as possible, so it's not just me and Simon alone in a room talking to ourselves sadly.
Like now.
And also, Lawless is an amazing con. It's the 10th anniversary of Lawless, and many of the best in British comics will be there. Everyone says this con is not to be missed. So get your tickets.
We are so looking forward to this.
This is our first con since the pandemic.
4 years?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Since Portsmouth?
Oh, no. No, Portsmouth was 2018. We did a C2E2, and,
Yeah. So we've done a couple of, but yeah, it's been a while.
It's been a while. It's the first con since before the pandemic, so that's long enough. Mm-hmm. So yay, Lawless. Okay, so that to answer your question, Boots. Yes, we will be here. Also, Boots, I would like to apologize formally to your cat for the opening and closing theme music. Who's a good kitty? Who's a good kitty? We're sorry. Jesus B. Christ asks if Simon and Robbie were ever censored by Tharg. Some of the Dante content was very racy for the Prague at the time, so he wants to know.
I think Dave Bishop talked about it, but I don't think he ever managed it. He said he was going to cover some things with speech balloons, but I don't think that ever worked out because he couldn't do it without when this panel was making any sense. I think that was the Skopsky gunship, which had basically a gun coming out where the groin region, the ship was shaped like a crucified Christ and the gun came out of the groin region of the ship. And that somehow was like too far.
Okay.
Fair enough. but there was no way to get a speech balloon over that and make it make any sense. So it ran and nobody complained.
And nobody said anything, thank goodness.
Thanks for not complaining, guys.
I was also going to say the famous Lulu with Dante on the leash.
Oh, yeah, that's true. That's maybe the only
Dante
one.
Dante was originally, if you remember, Lulu in the latex outfit with Dante on a leash and Dante on all fours.
Yeah, the kind
Cadre Infernale.
The title page for that was Cadre Infernale was Dante in bondage gear with a ball gag and a leash.
So it was originally a ball gag. In the final comic, he's just in a collar and leash.
With a dummy, or the dummy thing, dummy tit in his mouth.
Oh, with a pacifier.
As you would call it,
pacifier. For you Americans, right. It's a pacifier. Yes, exactly.
So yeah, that was censored.
Dummy tit.
Apparently.
I love you British people. Dummy tit. Incredible. Incredible.
It's exactly what it is.
You guys have wonderful language sometimes. Okay. Content Colin.
Content Colin.
And he's excited. When he posted this question, we were heading towards Simon's return to the strip. So you can see when these were posted and then when I got to them. Sort of the czar. But he was wondering how that felt to return to the strip and like what led to you returning to the strip. How did that feel after such a long time away and with other creators having added such a mark on the strip in your absence?
It was fun. It was good. I enjoyed it. It was great because Robbie and I had a conversation about it because I think he'd been like doing his own thing. He and Burns had been doing it for a little while. And I think it had lost some of his energy. I think no reflection on Burns at all, but I think Robbie had kind of got bored with the Pirates thing. And I think it was dragging on a bit at this point. So the story needed some new momentum, new inertia. And I think we sort of said, listen, let's let's pull it back onto the narrative again and get it going and get move it and do something big and dramatic, which sort of the Tsar was. So yeah, it definitely felt like a jolt of energy to the whole thing at that point, so which is exciting.
Yeah.
And I had a rest. I'd been away doing other things, and I was actually quite excited to be drawing it again, because when I'd left it the last time, it was kind of like, it had been years and years at that point. So I was like,
you're a little burnt out.
A little burnout. And yeah. I felt like I had a lot more to bring to it this time.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think was yeah. true. I think Sword of the Tsar looks great, and I was very excited. And you can see there's a lot of excitement in it. The artwork is certainly quite a bit further on in certain ways. Gary Caldwell and I had been working together on other things and discussed. You know, our method of working was much more sophisticated at that point, and you can see that developing here on quite quickly. So I think the artwork definitely starts to uptick. And that's always very satisfying when you feel that the artwork's getting better and the story's is moving faster and harder. And we're definitely arriving. We're heading towards a direction at this point. We're heading towards the end at this point. There's no stopping it, because I think that was a little bit woolly around about in the high seas.
The pirate yeah, years.
It didn't seem to be going anywhere very much.
I got to say, though, in the context of this overall story, I freaking love those pirate years.
I think it was nice to have them. That kind of interstitial period where there's kind of like nothing very much happening, but it's like rollicking adventures, but it wasn't big plot stuff.
You know, it's like Dante the Eras Tour, you know?
Right.
There's like the different eras of Dante. Okay. So this is content, Colin, so you know we've mm-hmm. got like three more questions. So here we go. So Sword of the Tsar feels like the point where the end is in sight. We have a ways to go, but the pieces for the end start to be dropped into place. At what point did you start to think about the ending and build toward it? Was it always there?
Well, the ending's always been there. It got protracted considerably. I mean, we went from a 5-year arc to 15. So yeah, there's a lot more added to it as Robbie had some more ideas, and we're all having fun with it. And it's like, it's hard to not do that. If an idea happens, you go, yeah, let's do that. You know, Robbie thinks 50-foot woman, let's do a story from that, and do that. And you just kind of get carried away by it. But yeah, I think at this point we were decided, it's like, no, we're going to drag it back mm-hmm. and see if we can finish it.
Yeah.
So this is kind of the last third. So this is the last 5 years, I think, of the story, more or less ish.
Okay.
And that's, yeah, to try to tie it all up. And, you know, the feeling that the plot was like really engaged at this point is quite strong, I hope.
Yeah. He also asks, Dante is well established by this point, and I'm guessing that you realize at this point in the run, the strip will now run and run until you and Robbie decided to call it.
Yeah.
When did that happen? When did you know that the strip would have as much time as you wanted to give it in 2008?
Oh, pretty early on. It was never a question. It was never a question that Dave was going to pull it. He was enjoying it, so I don't think he was going to stop it.
Right.
Dave Bishop. He was obviously enjoying it. Diggle didn't get much of a say on things, because he was only there for a relatively short time. And Matt was very into it. And it was Matt. Actually, it was Matt.
Mr. Matt Smith.
Yeah, Matt Smith was. It was passed along the grapevine that Matt was excited to get Dante moving again, and it was like, "Oh, really?
All right,
okay.
Then.
Well, that's fine. Well, let's do it then."
It's exciting. He asks, "What other comics do I love specifically me,
mm-hmm.
and how has reading Dante so closely compared to those and changed how I think about comics?"
Good question.
It is a really good. It's content, Colin. You know what kind of caliber you're
top
getting.
Top quality content.
Top quality. So what other comics do I love? Well, I mean, we were just talking the other day with someone about the Electra Saga. Electra Saga was a big one for me. That was, I think, some of the first comics I really got into, like, as an adult, like, as I was ending college, I got into the Electra Saga. That one really hit me like a Mack truck. I just loved it. I just mm-hmm. loved how dark it was, and I loved Electra as this very, very imperfect woman. She was a lead woman that was allowed to be messy and kind of like mean and weird and emotionally complicated, and you do not see that a lot mm-hmm. with women in comics. And violent as well, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think they get to be emotionally complicated. I'm sure we've seen Wonder Woman be emotionally complicated, mm-hmm. but like the goodies, it's she's not a baddie, she's not a goodie, you know. And it's like I was so into that. So there's that. That was a big one for me. other comics that I love. I mean, you know, I grew up on like the Crow comic book by James O'Barr and Sandman, you know. I mean, it was like I was in high school in the early to mid 90s, so you know, it was that time. It was the Vertigo times. So those were huge. So they'll always be, I guess, a sentimental favorite. What other stuff did I read that I liked in a more like modern sense? Oh my God. Well, it's been so long since I've read comics. When we met,
you were doing a read through of the X-Men.
That's true. Of course, I love the X-Men. How could I forget? Yes, I was doing a read through of the X-Men in chronological order, including all the spin-off books from Giant Size X-Men forward.
How's that going, Edie?
So I petered out around the Mutant Massacre, which is the end of the 80s. So I did it from Giant Size X-Men, which I forget what frickin' year that is. It's 70-something. All the way through, at least I think so it was 1988.
You got to like 30 years ago.
But you know what everyone says when I bring this up? Uh-huh. Is I say, I petered out around the Mutant Massacre, and universally people go, yeah, well, you're not missing much. That's a good place to stop. That's like what everyone says. But I want to read Age of Apocalypse. So, I mean, someday I'll get there. But so yeah, X-Men are a big one.
God Loves Man Kills. When's that?
Oh, yeah. I do... Where is it in the chronology? I believe we've already gotten through it at that point. God Loves Man Kills is one of my very, very favorite things mm-hmm. that exists in comics.
Right.
I've bought God Loves Man Kills for a lot of people.
It's on the shelf behind us.
Yes. I bought it for myself as well.
Indeed.
Also that and the What If Captain America Was Revived in 1984, I think. That's one of my favorite What Ifs mm-hmm. with the Bill Sienkiewicz cover. And I just love it because it's got like, it's just really gonzo. And it's like they've built a wall around Harlem and Manhattan. It's very, very New York centric. It's just kind of wonderful about like
DMZ
democracy.
Before the
and,
DMZ.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's really, it's super good. It's way better than it has any right to be. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I love my Marvel stuff. I really, really do. I mean, I also loved like Johnny the Homicidal Maniac was a big one for me.
True.
You know.
You gave me that comic to read.
I did when we first got together.
We did a swapsie. We said, okay, you give me one comic and I'll give you one comic.
I think we may have mentioned this on the podcast before. I can't remember. Yeah, you gave me Miracle Man.
That's right.
And I took Invader Zim. Mm-hmm. So I just feel like I should have prepared. I should have like looked at like Comics Wall. It's just I haven't read a lot of comics lately. Just Dante.
Mm-hmm.
How is Dante, reading Dante closely compared and changed how I think about comics? Dante's really challenged me because Dante was written over such a long period of time and has sort of gone through so many eras, if you will, I think it's stretched me to kind of just appreciate who Dante is and that characters don't have to be good people all the time for you to kind of root for them and be interested in them. So that's obviously something I loved with Elektra, but like now I'm even loving it with like, you know, a dude running around. I mean, listen, I do love the like carousing, like, let's be honest. Like I do love that. I very much enjoy a carousing story. But you know, the war really pushed me. That's where I fell off the first time when I started reading through Dante when we first got together.
Pushed me too.
Many moons ago. And I'm glad I stuck with it.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of tough moments in there, but it's an important era for Dante, I think.
Yeah.
It's an important era.
It is. You can have the fun and games, but you have to have the misery too.
You gotta have, it's gotta have stakes, as you're fond of always saying.
Indeed.
I think Dante stretched me in a number of ways. Shout out to Magnetica, who on the boards thanked us for the podcast and said it was the only podcast they listened to regularly.
What?
And gave them an incentive to do the complete Dante read through they've been meaning to do for years. So thank you. Okay. Shout out for that. We appreciate that. We're closing the book on Dante for today. But we will be back next time with Hellfire.
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 We hope you enjoyed our podcast. And if so, please subscribe to it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify. Leave us ratings and reviews wherever you can. And tell your friends, tell them to pick up the books and read along through with us. Join our book club. Follow us on Instagram at PodTGDR. Let us know what you think of the podcast, of Dante Comics, whatever is on your mind. I'm Edie.
And I'm Simon.
And we will catch you next time.
Bye.